It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Cicadas!
What about them?
I know things now.
Oh, good.
So, here's how it works.
Okay, good.
According to my wife, according to Wikipedia by way of my wife, there are two species of cicada whose actual existence, they're referred to as 13 and 17 year cicadas.
Oh.
And that is because within a population, in synchronicity, their life cycle is 13 years and 17 years respectively. Hmm. Within a population. It is not synchronized within the whole species.
Species, yeah.
So, like, in a given region, they're all on the same cycle.
Hmm.
But, like, the ones here and the ones in, you know, Arkansas or whatever, they're also on a 13 or 17-year cycle, but not necessarily the same one as the ones here.
Okay.
In addition, there are many other species of cicada, most of which are on a greater than one-year cycle, but none of which are synchronized even within the population.
Oh, I see.
And there is, in fact, at least one species that is on essentially a one-year cycle.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So
I thought they were all multi-year cycles.
No, apparently there's at least one that is. And nobody's really sure why about any of it.
Where did I get the number 7? It seemed like a 7-year cycle.
I thought it was 7 and 12, but apparently it's 13 and 17, and based on one, again, unproven theory as to why, it's something to do, Trish couldn't remember exactly, but it's a math thing, and, like, it's important that it's a prime number for some reason.
Oh.
There's also theories on, like, predation and stuff, because you can't become the regular prey of a predator if you're only around every 13 or 17 years.
That's true.
And it, you know, the number comes at once, and there's a lot of, so, yeah, there's a lot of factors, but that's what's going on. So that still probably means every 13 and 17 years in a completely unrelated cycle, it probably is louder.
Sure, sure.
Than other years. But so that's the story on that.
Well, if you've got two groups, I mean, there's going to come some years where the 13 and 17 happen at the same time.
Yes, every
however many
13 times 17 years. Gonna be really loud.
That'd be interesting.
So you'd only experience that once a lifetime at most.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot. Yes.
And not coming back in 13 years.
No.
Unless the zombie apocalypse brings you back.
Yeah.
There's that.
There's always the zombie apocalypse. Also, so you know how sometimes you drink a lot of liquid, and you don't go to the bathroom for a while, and you really have to pee?
Sure.
And you go ahead and pee, and it, like, takes a really long time?
Yeah, sure.
I have this thing I do sometimes when that happens, where I just am very still, and then as it continues on, I start doing, like, awkward pause things. Like, I start sort of looking around and sighing. But I'm by myself.
Oh, okay.
Like, in a stall or at home.
Sure.
But I'm doing, like, a one-man scene of it where I'm just like,
when is this going to end kind of thing?
Yeah, and never vocalizing anything, but just sort of thing. Because it amuses the shit out of me every time. And I don't know why, but it cracks me up. I'm just like,
anytime now.
Every time. I've done it many, 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 many times over many years. Never does not amuse me. And I don't break character the whole time. I'm a very good actor.
Oh, yeah,
in this particular respect. But it just amuses the hell out of me. I don't know why. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world. What comes in the night to steal your gold?
Yep. So far, we're usually disappointed because
nobody has any gold anymore. Lame. Yeah. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 439.
What did you think of that video I sent you?
It was unnerving.
It was unnerving to a lot of people. And I feel like it should be. It brings me such joy. I've watched it like a dozen times. I don't know why. It brings me so much joy. People, go to YouTube. Especially if you're listening to this and it's like current. Go to YouTube, type in house, full house, and the first thing that pops up is full house of mustaches, and you watch it. I say this because they're spelling mustaches wrong.
Oh, they are.
It's M-U-S-T-C-H-E-S, and I believe mustache is M-O-U.
I didn't happen to notice.
But anyway, full house of mustaches. Somebody's taken the open... This is a hilarious use of the deep fake technology, which is the thing that will soon be horrifying all of us in so many ways.
I think the originating channel is Dr. Fakenstein.
Dr. Fakenstein, yes. Yeah. And he took the opening credits sequence to Full House and replaced everyone's face with Nick Offerman. Specifically, Ron Swanson version of Nick Offerman.
That's right.
It's amazing.
It works every best time. On the youngest.
That's the thing. So the Jodie Sweetin and the Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen ones are like my favorites.
Yeah, they're like really good. It's like,
there's
wow,
something
that's
when
amazing.
When Jodie Sweetin one is like tired and leans back and Ron Swanson's. Although the Kimmy Gibbler one is really good for some reason. When she comes in, like looks around and then smiles, is beautiful. The Lori Loughlin one, kind of disturbing, but... but no, it's amazing. I've watched it so many times. I feel like it should horrify me. It brings me just unbridled joy.
My theory about the Uncanny Valley is that there's not really like a universal Uncanny Valley. I think some people don't experience it at all. Other people experience it in very specific circumstances.
And this is not why I say it's going to be horrifying coming up. The deepfakes technology that is getting really darn close to being able to fake it so that it looks like it's actually a person, means we are soon to the point where video evidence will not be as reliable. And we're even closer to the point where people are going to blame it on this and claim that video evidence is not true. We're already at the point where people have voice recordings and sometimes they're like, oh no, that was faked. Not very often, but sometimes. So this technology means it's going to be more and more. And very quickly, we're just not going to be able to believe any of our classic... we've got it recorded.
Yeah.
Things.
There's a bowl with herbs. You should put your pasta in it.
Makes sense.
And there's cheese in the refrigerator.
All right. Is there also, like, sausage and things in the bowl?
No, the pasta's on the stove.
And the herbs are in the bowl, and then... Oh, you mixed it in?
The pasta and the sauce are on the stove.
All right.
The garnishes and the cheese
are in the bowl. All right.
Cheese in the fridge.
Thank you.
In the late 80s, I wrote a story about a sort of a post-apocalyptic situation where a societal collapse happened because digital technology got to a point where people couldn't trust distant sources of information.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So telecommunications weren't trusted. The result was a lot of people would only trust things that they heard directly from other people.
Yeah.
I mean, they still consumed media, but they just didn't. They took it with a grain of salt, or they just allowed themselves to be entertained by it, I guess. But
if only the
reason it led to societal collapse was because without reliable telecommunications, nobody took centralized government seriously. Nobody took a lot of things seriously. So the main problem was in the cities, and rural people were kind of okay, except that some people from the cities came and would harass rural people who knew how to do things and had, you know, they planted crops, so they had extra, what do I want to say, resources. So it created a situation where you had these little settlements throughout the United States, but no centralized government, and that's what the story took place in. And I remember when I first came up with this story, a lot of people didn't think that anything like that would ever happen, and it probably won't, but...
No, but I think the circumstances have happened, and the result has not happened because, unfortunately,
people trust it anyway.
They
yeah.
still fucking believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
They and it's not even. I mean, in some cases, it's a people are stupid, but in a lot of cases, people just believe what's easiest for them to believe.
Well, what they want to believe, sure. Yeah. Yeah. So yes,
I catch myself doing it sometimes. Even
there were a few people who, like me, were studying computer-mediated interaction in the late 80s who kind of got what I was trying to get.
No, because the circumstances, I think, have absolutely happened, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So, if you're just joining us, welcome to the Dystopian Fun Hour. Here's how this show works if you've never heard us before. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, cool people, less people these days, but people still... help out by writing into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat on its own magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Gonna get your gold, servants. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of the show. Did you take the pledge and get the coupon?
I did not.
Oh!
I forgot about that. How could I forget?
I don't know. I have no idea how you could forget. You're the one who told me a day early about Root Beer Float Day.
Well, there were very specific things distracting me that I don't know if I want to get into, but it was a distraction.
A&W wanted you to make a pledge that for an hour every Friday, I think you would put away screen devices and
yes,
things.
Yes, that's what it was.
And in exchange, they were going to give you a coupon for a free 2-liter of A&W root beer. I didn't do it either. But that's because I wasn't planning on taking the pledge. And also, I can buy my own damn root beer. This is the thing I run into. So, at my gym, they're having a food drive recently. And so, there's some boxes out with food. I don't actually know what exactly is going on. I'm not involved. But that's they're clearly raising food there. And one of the things that's been sitting there for a while is a big box of Nutter Butter cereal.
Okay.
And I like Nutter Butters. I think I've had Nutter Butter cereal before. And there's a little part of me that's like, you just take the box. Don't do it. And I'm like, no, you won't do that. This is taking food from the poor. That's terrible. Don't do that. And I've spent days, like, I mean, I don't want you to think this is like a compulsion of mine. But there's a little voice that's like, you can take it. I'm like, no, of course I wouldn't. And it was only the other day that I realized, also, I could go buy my own box and it would be a financial impact of little enough that I wouldn't notice.
Yeah, right, right.
Like, and so it's the same thing with a lot of these, like, oh, get a free 2-liter of A&W. I'm like, what's that, like $2 at most?
Yeah,
I could just buy
it.
I could just buy it.
Yeah.
And then keep my screens up on Friday. But there's a lot of things like that. That's the trick of getting the deal. Like, we offer, oh, that. Trish gets really mad if it's a thing where, oh, we missed out on gas savings. Like, oh, we missed out on, like, 7 cents of gas if we'd done this when we were shopping. And I'm like, she gets mad when I do the math. Because I'm like, our car holds this much, so we would have saved at most. That she's like, shut up. And don't get me wrong, I do it. In the grand scheme, it adds up. But it's just a routine now. Like, I don't work extra hard to do things to get extra savings. It's just whenever I go get gas, I put the thing in, I get whatever I saved, and
yep.
And it adds up a little bit over time.
That's right.
It seems to be a good answer, because I've noticed that gas prices are sneaking up again, and nobody's really saying anything. Whereas before, they start freaking out by this point. But I'm like... But that was before we have this thing where all sorts of businesses now want to give you savings in gas. And I think that has calmed the masses a little bit. So, how's your week been?
It's fine. There's this question I've been meaning to ask you, but I keep forgetting. It's come from watching that British baking show or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I don't I cannot for the life of me figure out what in Britain a pudding is.
Ah.
I mean, I've heard of British puddings my whole life, and I knew they weren't like Jell-O pudding or whatever. I knew that they weren't that, but I didn't know quite what they were. And they talk about it on the baking show because they make them and stuff, and I still can't figure it out. I don't know what makes something a pudding versus just a cake or just a whatever.
A pudding pretty much just means a dessert.
Well, I was kind of gathering that, but they have other desserts that they don't call pudding.
Yes. I don't know what the distinction is, and then you also get into things like Yorkshire puddings, which is a savory thing. But in general, pudding, I mean, pudding in certain parts of the UK and in certain time periods in the UK is synonymous with just dessert.
Hmm.
Sometimes there are, I think it's not necessarily synonymous with sweets, because it is very much synonymous specifically with dessert. And so, you know, like we've talked about, like donuts are not a dessert. They're a sweet, but
okay,
they're not
sure.
necessarily dessert, so they wouldn't necessarily call that a pudding.
Sure.
It is a somewhat more old-fashioned term, and so that may be part of why it goes in and out, depending on who's talking on the show. I can't say for certain. A while ago, I watched a show, I think I've talked about this, where this one comedian and his friend, another comedian, go to various places, and the first comedian has type 1 diabetes. And so it's essentially a review show of desserts.
You did talk
but
about
he
that.
Makes the other guy eat them.
Right.
That show is called Just Puddings. And they've had all sorts of things. They've had gelato. They've had a fudge. They've had a variety of like elaborate desserts that some restaurants have and things like that. Just all sorts of stuff. So, but it is a tricky thing in my mind as well.
Well, but I mean, everybody on the show seems to know, like, no, but I've never heard any of the contestants say, I've never heard of this pudding, or I don't know why they're calling this a pudding. I mean, everyone, when something's called a pudding, they all seem to agree, yes, that's a pudding. And when they don't call a particular thing a pudding, that to me is just like that other thing, nobody calls it that. So it's like, what is really the difference between the thing everybody seemed to agree was a pudding and this thing, which looks like the same thing to me, but nobody's calling it that?
I am not certain. I can tell you one thing with certainty. The internet will answer this question for you in like 30 seconds.
No, it's no.
Did you go to Wikipedia and type in pudding?
Yeah, it's like I've looked there and it's either I just don't understand what they're saying, or when I read it, I get the impression that they think the person reading it knows what it basically is.
Oh,
and so
man.
They end up talking about all kinds of other stuff.
Hey, you're making me break the rules and shit here. Luckily, we don't hold by any rules. All right, I'm going to look this shit up.
It has been a while since I looked it up there, but it was totally unhelpful. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, because it must have been within the last year, and I looked it up thinking, well, Wikipedia will explain it to me, and I didn't get it.
Yeah, that one is a lie, so I'm going to go. Well, no, that one's just like what we would call pudding in America.
Oh, like Jell-O pudding?
Yeah, they're like, could be sweet or savory. It may also refer to dessert, generally, a usage seen in the United Kingdom and other Commonwealth countries.
Okay, that doesn't help me, because like I said, I keep experiencing it on this show, like it's not dessert generally. They, as bakers, I think, have a particular idea of what it means. Sometimes I've heard them say it and it sounds like the context is dessert, but usually not. Usually it's something very specific.
All right.
But not specific enough for me to tell what it is.
When Wikipedia fails us, Stu, tell us. Do it, Stu.
Are there regional differences, do you suppose?
Stu, fuck you if you're like, I wasn't big in pop culture before the 90s. Or like, do it. No, I'm sure it is. Everything really horrible. Like, they love to blame Americans for a lot of trouble with the English language. And we have butchered the English language. But most of the things wrong with the English language are from goddamn England and Britain. Because they have so many different dialects that have all created their own fucking weird terms.
Well,
and I mean, we're doing it here, but we're younger. We haven't had as much chance.
Just today, they had a challenge on the show, which was basically just puddings. Now, again, what everybody made just based on that instruction alone were similar enough. They didn't make a pie, or they didn't make, you know, they made things that were similar to each other. And I thought, well, now I'm finally getting it, because all
were they all vaguely gelatinous?
See, this is just it. So when the only instruction was make two flavors of pudding or whatever, and everybody seemed to know what that meant, I thought, well, finally I'm going to get to see what it means to them. And they did all make similar things. One of the things they had to do was make a sponge pudding, because you can make a bread pudding, you can make all different kinds. So they were instructed to have that in common, but then they all did similar kinds of stuff, which it seemed to be you have a sponge, but you also have a custard, perhaps.
Okay.
Or some other soft and or liquidy aspect.
I'm willing to believe that a pudding needs to be eaten with a spoon. That could be a component.
Oh. You know what? I think that was a thing that was sort of they all had in common. They were more moist than regular sponges.
Yeah.
But like the Scottish guy made these things that from Scotland, I forget what they're called, but they weren't that similar to what everybody else was doing, but nobody seemed to think that that wasn't a pudding. So I don't know. And you I mean, it could be savory too. So.
Scotland, you get a dispensation, because everyone else not in Scotland, in the UK, thinks Scotland's weird. And they're not wrong.
But then the next challenge was something called the Queen of Puddings. And what it had was custard on the bottom,
mm-hmm.
but it was stabilized with breadcrumbs.
Okay.
I don't know if that's important or not. But, I mean, they didn't treat it like that mattered, that it was just custard and the breadcrumbs were only there because there were going to be things on top of the custard and it needed to have some structural integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was jam.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was meringue.
All right.
But whenever they have meringue on this show, it's not like a lot of people get on lemon meringues here. It's like baked.
No. It's the rest of the world understands meringues better than we do.
Yeah. So it's kind of baked. It's got a marshmallowy center, and it's crisp when you hit it with a
spoon. If you've ever had meringue as its own thing, I mean, the recipe is essentially the same as the stuff you get in a lemon meringue. It just tends to be more solid.
Yeah.
And it's not a topping to things. It's its own thing.
Right. So that's what it was. They put them in clear containers so they could see the layers.
Like a parfait or a trifle kind of deal.
Yeah, but they called it a pudding.
Well, they call it a queen of pudding. The way you say that, I'm betting that's a specific dish.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, that's right. So the meaning changed by context in that situation, maybe.
Or it's just a title. That's not... I mean, like I said, there's a thing called Yorkshire pudding. By no definition would you call that a pudding. It's not a dessert, and it's not at all gelatinous. It's essentially a puff pastry.
Hmm.
And I think that may just be an old regional joke or something.
You,
I don't know.
You'd think that people would... I mean, nobody expresses any confusion. Like, they all know. Like, they don't have any problem. Nobody ever... And the reason I say this is because they interview the people competing while they're doing things.
Yeah.
And they're often confused about things.
Yeah.
There's often something they've never even heard of that they have to make. So if they were confused by what a pudding was, you'd think they'd say so, but they never act confused by it. Like, they know exactly when someone says something's a pudding what that means.
It could be a British thing. It could also be a not William thing. I don't know because I'm not seeing it.
It's hard
but,
to say.
It sounds like it's probably more a British thing. Stu, get on this. Answer it for me. For William, I mean, I don't actually care.
I thought you might know since you were there and maybe you figured it out or something.
Not so far. I mean, or I thought I had, but you have knocked down every theory I had.
Oh,
so.
Sorry.
Why sorry? If you're right, then
I
didn't know.
I can't be right because I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, you have counter evidence.
Oh, I see.
I suppose you should apologize for not leaving me in my blissful world where I thought I knew what pudding meant to the Brits. You have pulled the wool from my eyes, and I see the world as a dark and shameful place it actually is, where I'm not sure what they mean. Stu will save us. Anyway, Stu finally responded. I was all set to go into a list of top reasons why Stu was clearly bailing on the whole meeting you at IHOP thing.
Okay.
Because he hadn't replied. Something I said the other day at work, he was like, oh yeah, I got a reply to that. So.
Was there an International House of Pancakes where you were growing up?
Yeah, I worked at one The summer before I went to the UK, actually, worked at one.
Were they calling it IHOP at that time, or?
Yeah.
The one in Des Moines had a vaguely Bavarian building.
I mean, I think the sign still said International House of Pancakes. Okay. That I think it started as a slang thing, and got adopted. There was a time period where the building said International House of Pancakes, and we called them IHOPs.
So the, like I said, in Des Moines, the building was even had a vaguely Bavarian type of design to it, and it was called International House of Pancakes.
Yeah.
Did they have, was it that?
Like a chalet kind of thing. Yeah. And they had weird fake, I mean, the one I worked at wasn't like that because the one I worked at had moved into a building that already existed.
Oh.
But they're ones I had been to that were built from scratch.
And it looked like that.
Yes. And frequently had like designs. I don't think they were actually, I think they were like frosted glass designs of like different countries' flags.
Oh.
I think was a thing too.
And then, seems like they permanently had out various flavors of syrup. They didn't have to like bring it. It was like always.
No, it's still there as far as I know. You and I went, it was still there.
Oh, I thought they had to bring it.
They had peach, raspberry, blackberry, and butter pecan, which is the reason I go.
I'm pretty sure when I was little. See, we used to. My grandparents lived in Greenfield.
I don't think they had pancakes when you were little.
My grandparents lived in Greenfield, Iowa, which was an hour and a half away.
Okay.
So often we saw them by meeting them someplace.
Yeah.
And the two most popular places for us to meet them was in Indianola, where the NW is, or just in Des Moines somewhere, but we'd almost always end up eating it at International House of Pancakes that was across from Merle Hay Mall.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure I always just had waffles. I don't think I even had pancakes when I ate it.
Do you know the history of Merle Hay?
The fella that it's named after?
Yeah.
A war hero, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And
I believe he was the first American to die in one of the world wars.
I should know this, and I'm having
also
a hard time remembering.
Also, I'm pretty sure
specifics.
He was a black man.
But the
I only know this shit because a comedian did several minutes on it.
The road was named Merle Hay. Before the mall. The mall's named after the road, kind of, but it's also...
I think the guy was named after the mall, so...
Yeah, I should know what you're talking about specifically.
I know, it's your jam.
I know.
Like,
and maybe if you'd ask me any other day, because that's where my memory works. It's better on some days than others.
Speaking of jam, anything in this country that we would call jam, jelly, or preserves, they're pretty much going to call jam on that show.
Oh, I got that.
What they say jelly is what we would call Jell-O.
Right, that's right. Yeah. I already figured that out.
All
right. And the jam would be what we would call, we might call it a jelly, but it's got chunks of fruit in it.
Sometimes, yeah.
I mean, I think we mostly call that a jam, don't we? When it's got chunks of fruit and
yes.
all that stuff?
Yes. Usually if it's, I believe the American one is, if it's cooked down from fruit, it's jam. If it's cooked down from jelly, or it's cooked down from juice, it's jelly.
Okay, right.
And then whether or not it's preserves has to do with percentages of sugar and things in this country.
Okay.
Over there, pretty much all of that sort of jam. But
I think
they make some distinction sometimes.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
They do make a distinction in the show. I mean, if it's jam, it's got to be, you've got to have made it from fresh fruit and cooked it down and stuff.
Mm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just get confused sometimes with their terminology. But we were talking some time ago, too, about how you pick up certain words.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm so tempted when I want to throw something away just to express that I'm tossing in the bin, you know, which is, that's a British thing. That's not, people don't say that.
Somebody
here.
Called me out on using the term takeaway a while back.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about
before.
And I was
like, to go.
That's what
well,
we were talking about
before. Did I talk about the one where I couldn't remember the term bachelorette party?
Yeah.
That one was bad, too.
You said.
Yeah, and the other guy got it, and I was like, awesome. Because he remembered I'd been watching a lot
of
British stuff.
Yeah, there's certain things they say that they say in Britain and not here, but you start to, like, pick it up, and you start thinking that way. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've been watching a lot of that. That's why I brought it up. And playing Conan Exiles and stuff.
I saw you guys doing that.
But how about your week? How was it?
Pretty good, I think. I'm still writing every day.
Good.
Not necessarily writing very much. But that worked. I spent a few days on the description of the house using descriptive terms.
Yeah.
I don't think that helped me in my descriptive language very well. Weirdly, out of all the shit I've written, it's the one that I think most likely could be turned into a short story.
Oh, okay.
Because at a certain point, I got bored with it, and so started playing around with it, and I made it interesting.
Oh, okay.
And when I was finished, it was about 2,000 words long, and I'm like,
wow.
It would take some work, but I could probably turn this into a thing. But then I finally went to working on my world building for Becca James Lowenstein, which was mostly just sort of free writing, but trying to knock out the bits.
Yeah.
Like what? And that being said, I've got the whole plot.
Wow.
Down.
Wow.
I mean, it's a sort of vague paragraph, but it's like this happens, and this happens, and this happens, and this happens.
Hmm.
I have the overall racial, occupational, and species breakdown of the space pirates.
Yeah.
In it. And I've got some of the overarching setting stuff down.
Okay.
Some of it, as I went on, I realized some of it won't necessarily be explained in an initial book.
Sure.
And I have a feeling, well, and I don't know if this is accurate. For the kind of book I imagine this is going to be, I expect it to be shorter.
Mm.
It is going to have a lot more action.
Yeah.
And a lot more humor.
Sure.
Than Odd Wings. And actually, probably a lot more sex. Although, I think I've discovered I'm one of those who has to sort of fade to black after the foreplay. I don't know. I just feel it's disruptive otherwise.
Mm.
So, but.
But you don't find it disruptive when you read it in a story? Or maybe you do and you just don't mind.
It depends. Sometimes I do. What it often comes down to is how good it is written.
Okay.
And the problem is, I think, what it takes to write a good sex scene and what it takes to write a good most other kinds of scenes aren't necessarily the same skill set. Mm. That's the other thing. I don't necessarily think I'm really good at writing, like, actual sex. Mm. And it's a narrative thing. So I'm like, for the most part, you just need to know that it's clear that they went off and had sex. Mm. And then like, that tells you what you need to know about the relationship and what's happening. Because that kind of shit matters. But I don't need to know how, who was standing on whose shoulders and, you know, that kind of business. I don't know how sex works either. That's part of the problem. like, yeah, I don't know. Just when I was writing Odd Wings, I mean, there is no sex in Odd Wings, but already thinking ahead later, there's definitely going to be sex in Odd Wings. But every time I think about it, I'm like, you know, referential materials and, you know, like flirting and foreplay and stuff, yes. But I'm like, the sex doesn't feel like it fits.
Hmm.
And there's also some very specific reasons that I feel are spoilery to bring up right now. But there are reasons why it's a better narrative experience to leave it out in Odd Wing stuff.
Sure.
But also, just in general, many of the characters in Becca James Lowenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates, ! Have much more, I'd say, sort of libertine views on it.
Sure.
So that's a thing.
Right, right.
I'm a little stuck again. I think I've talked about this before. In Becca James Lowenstein, Queen of Space Pirates, there's going to be a story.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert.
Right.
And it's going to be in third person.
Third person?
Yes, I'm doing third person this time.
Wow.
I even may go so far as to do third-person omniscient to the degree where, like, we have scenes that take place with the villains that our heroes don't know anything about. I haven't really decided. I'm not sure on that. But it's going to be a third-person story, because it's much more of an ensemble thing anyway.
Right.
Is that you, right?
You neglected to say that in the last podcast where there was a... Which I think was the last podcast.
I has shame. Anyway, interspersed in this is going to be another story in first person, which is basically going to be the life of Becca James Lowenstein, specifically leading up to where the book started.
Mm.
Her backstory.
In first person flashbacks.
Yes. Yes.
That'll be interesting.
And my plan is, I sort of know what the chunks are going to be, but my plan is essentially I'm going to write it as one big short story, and then chunk it up and put it in the right places in the book.
Sure.
In my head, that's always the first thing I write when it comes to actually writing the book.
Sure.
For some reason, I'm rethinking that now.
Oh.
That I might go the other way. And I don't know. And it seems to hinge on which parts are going to talk about what parts of the setting and what order do I want to write that. I feel like one's going to influence, whatever I write first is going to influence the one I write second.
Sure.
And I'm now less sure about which one I want to influence which one.
Mm.
So I don't know yet. Also, I just have to fucking name everything. There's way more characters, and more than that, there's way more places and things and species and stuff. So many fucking things I have to name.
That's kind of hard, actually.
It really is.
That is one of the more challenging things.
I my brain spent a good hour one night trying to come up with the name of their ship, and I have yet to succeed or narrow it down even.
I have a...
Well, and this is going to be a thing, because part of the thing is everybody has universal translation. It's going to be sort of Farscape-esque. They're going to have something internally translates everything. But I want to play on this, and like one of the big things is idiom doesn't necessarily translate.
That's right.
And so I, like, because like earlier I was like, oh, maybe I'll come up with like weird sci-fi swear words. And then I'm like, no, because universal translation. So my plan now is like certain people are going to have certain swear, like, epithets that don't sound, like, that are silly to us. Mm. So, but it makes sense in their language. So this alien, like, if they're really mad, they're like, you know, like, you cheap fisherman or something, which, like, sounds silly to us, but that's how it'll translate in the thing. But then something like, what is the significance of naming the spaceship X? You know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, well, in what language?
Right.
So that's been making it tricky too. But yeah, I'm very excited to have individual swears that are still in English but are translated from
some other
country. Whatever the original idiom was.
As I'm writing Constable Bluehawk stuff, I have a spreadsheet with dozens of names on it.
Mm.
And it demarks what race, what gender, what orientation. Some of these are characters that exist in the world I'm writing in, but we might not even meet.
Ah.
But I'm anticipating these things because I don't want certain groups overrepresented.
Is that the word? Yeah,
I think that's the word
for?
I'm looking for. In like, you know, like as I'm writing it, I might accidentally make everybody who is in a position of authority more one race or gender.
Yeah,
than
yeah,
the other.
Yeah, yeah.
So I use this as a reference when I'm writing the story to sort of give me my bearings, but sometimes I have to change it. Like I'll realize, you know, I've got way too many male characters or not enough black characters or whatever, so I'm going to make this character black
yeah.
or female or whatever. And I might think, oh, I've got way too many characters that express religious sentiments and I want a certain number of atheists, actually. And so I make sure... A lot of my characters express a sentiment when they leave somebody that's kind of like God bless you. It's not God bless you, but it's kind of like that. And and the ones who don't do that, you might recognize them maybe not being a religious person.
Yeah.
So there's reasons to demark there. And so I sometimes while I'm writing, I have to update this sort of database that I've made because I want the alternate reality I'm creating has evolved in such a way that there's going to be fairly proportional representation no matter where you go. And I want that very badly in what I'm doing. But to do that, you really do have to pay attention. It's hard to check your own biases.
See, and
without something to help you.
I don't have that problem because I'm just pushing all the way.
Oh,
I'm
right.
It's very, like, I have to very specifically think to make a male character or specifically think to make a white character and things like that.
Yeah, right.
I got to admit, I don't do as well with the racial representation in terms of parody. But That's P-A-R-I-T-Y, by the way.
There's only humans in my thing, and you're going to have aliens, and that makes it trickier.
And the name thing becomes so much worse.
Yes, right.
Because a lot of, and actually editors complimented me on this, that the characters had all pretty much normal names for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, it's so nice, I don't have to remember what it was usual thing.
Yeah, right.
And that was sort of on purpose and all that. But yeah, with sci-fi, no, they're going to be all over the place.
Yeah, that's right.
And I have to name their species, and like, yeah, it's going to be a lot of naming.
Is it like a?
But I'm a GM. I've done it before.
Is it a galactic-wide thing or a universe-wide thing?
It is a universe-wide thing, and one of the major aspects of it is it doesn't look anything like people on Earth think it is.
Okay.
So even terms of galaxy and universe don't necessarily apply.
Oh.
Again, this is some of the comedy is going to spring from this, because Earth has very intentionally been essentially gaslit to think certain things that are not accurate, and our hero's not particularly adept at science, but some basic concepts be like, no, that's not that you're from Earth. They made you think that. That's not true. And it also helps me dealing with, because it's very soft sci-fi, and it has to be, because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, and I'm not going to bother researching it.
Sure.
So this gives me an out.
They must have a...
I've discovered this is my trick as a writer, is I can frequently screw things up, and I can fix it not by having to learn the correct answer, but by making it funny.
I mean, I think...
I have a major plot hole near the end of Odd Wings that people pointed out to me in the last draft, and in the new draft, I don't really solve it. I just laugh at it, and then I think it's fine.
When I read Douglas Adams, I mean, I don't recall him having a lot of, you know, him going out of his way to make it really scientifically, like, anything.
No, he plays with concepts occasionally. But no, I mean, he apparently straight up said he invented the infinite improbability drive because he wrote his characters into a place that they were stuck. And he's like, I don't know how to get them out of here. Oh, I know! Like, that kind of thing. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't say it as a bad thing, but it's definitely going to be very soft sci-fi. It's much more space opera.
And the propulsion they used to go all over the universe?
That's the infinite improbability drive.
In Douglas Adams?
Yes.
But what are you using?
Still working on that. The short answer is going to be extra-dimensional space. Faster-than-light travel doesn't actually exist.
Right.
You just travel extra-dimensionally. Which, again, I actually envisioned when I was working on an aspect of the plot, finding out that Becca James, who's lived in this setting for a long time now, just thought it was faster than light travel. Because, like, they're going to call the engine something or whatever. And
yeah.
Like, no, that's not a thing. That doesn't exist. What's wrong with you?
Is it going to be instantaneous, or is there going to be, like...
No.
An interdimensional medium that... Okay.
Yeah, it's just a shorter distance.
Yeah.
It's not that you travel faster than light. It's that you travel shorter.
Do you have a notion of how long it would take to travel from one side of the universe to another?
Not at this point. It's going to travel at the speed of plot.
It's perfectly good.
Yes.
It's perfectly fine.
Well, at least until I find a need for something else.
Right.
Like, a lot of those kind of things I won't define until there comes a point that I would need to.
Right.
All right, we're getting low on time. I do want to run up one other thing here.
Oh,
watched
sorry.
A movie. I watched a couple movies, some of which were ridiculous, including the movie Spirits, which is a 1980s possession movie in which Eric Estrada plays a fallen priest. Hilariously bad. Also possibly the worst ghost hunter found footage movie I've ever seen in my life, called The La Llorona Curse, or La Llorona Curse. Not to be confused with The Curse of La Llorona, which is the film that...
Newer film, yeah.
That's from Conjuring Universe or whatever.
Is it?
Or is it from the Sinister Universe? I remember one of those. This is a cheap thing that's trying to cash in on the name. It was so bad. It was one of those, like, not only were the production values atrocious, which they were, you couldn't hear most of the movie, but, like, character character motivations changed within the same scene. Rules they established went away. Like, people were terrified of doing X, and then, like, three sentences later, they're like, okay, I'll do X. Like, for no reason. Like, it was insane. It was terrible. Absolutely terrible. But, no, I want to talk about last night. We watched Tully, which we had not ever seen.
That sounds familiar.
Diablo Cody wrote it. Charlize Theron, married to Ron Livingston. They have two children, and she's heavily pregnant with a third. And it is suggested that she get a night nanny for this one to help her, because she's dealing with a lot of stuff. One of her children has neuroatypical tendencies, and there's just a lot of crap going on, and somebody suggests for the third kid that they get a night nanny, and hijinks ensue. The plot is both difficult to explain and dangerously spoilery to explain. Mm. But it is mostly just a story about this woman and her family and some stuff that happens in their life. And I'd say the story is a lot about growing up and about motherhood and things like that. I really liked it.
Oh.
A lot.
Okay.
It also, if I had seen this movie back in the day where we were still debating whether or not we were going to have kids, this movie would have solidified us not having kids. Holy shit. Especially the first, like, hour or so is just like, man, sucks to be a parent. But brilliant performances all around. Really just brought home for me again that Charlize Theron is a perfect actor.
She's very good.
She's ridiculously good.
Yeah.
She's so good. I kind of want to see Monster now.
Oh, you haven't seen it. Okay.
I don't want to see it, and it's not the kind of movie I ever want to see. Yeah. But, like, it's such a transformative role for her. And this one, like, she just disappears. It's fucking Charlize Theron, and you very quickly forget it's fucking Charlize Theron.
Monster's very amazing. Good. It's very good filmmaking. I understand why you wouldn't want to see it.
It's just, yeah, not my kind of thing, but I'm like, but yeah. She is so...
Really good.
She elevates movies that are good to just absolutely amazing. And in movies that are terrible that she does, and there are some of those, she is often the big shining bright spot. I mean, she was one of the greatest things about... They did the Snow White and the Huntsman,
mm-hmm.
and then they did the second one. And the second one was kind of fun, just as a fantasy action movie. The first one was pretty terrible. But the only good thing about it was her. She was an amazing, like, Wicked Queen character. She's unbelievable. Like, and it's really funny because for many, many years I confused her and Scarlett Johansson.
Oh.
And I don't do that at all anymore. And one of the main reasons involved is I like Charlize Theron so much more. Scarlett Johansson is a perfectly decent actress. But she's a movie star. Charlize Theron is one of those rare movie stars who is also a character actor. She's an Alan Alda. Like, you never forget it's Charlize Theron, and you always immediately forget it's Charlize Theron. Like, she pulls it off so well, and she does. She makes this movie, too. Although there are great performances across the board, including with the kids. So I recommend it. It's not a super easy movie to watch, but it's not a really tough movie to watch. Mm. It's just sort of real. I would say if you had to pin it down, I mean, it's Diablo Cody. If you had to pin it down, it's probably a black comedy. I found it fascinating the places that the movie clearly wanted me to laugh and I didn't, but then the places that the movie was taking serious and I found funny. And usually that's a bad sign, but for some reason it just sort of worked here because they were all very subtle.
Yeah.
But yeah, good movie. I'm a little surprised. I didn't know a lot about it, and I didn't expect to like it like I did. But it's good, and I recommend it. And I feel like Abby would really like it. I'm not entirely sure why.
She likes Charlize Theron, though. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, we've seen Aeon Flux many times. Pretty much just because she's in it.
You would have to.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie is... garbage fire.
A lot of problems with it, but she likes Shirley.
She's amazing. So. She's amazing.
Yep.
Without a doubt. The problem is I don't know how you'd see it. It's part of the reason we saw it is it is leaving HBO like this month.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know where it's going to land next.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll land on something you have, but recommend it. Tully. Yeah, okay, draw a thing.
The Iowa State Fair starts today.
Yes.
Started today.
Yes.
I don't think I'm going this year, actually.
What the? What? Why? Wait, don't even look at that question. Why? What's happening?
Well, there's just so many other things going on. And I mean, we might
It's go. In like the top five reasons you're still alive.
Right, but...
The Iowa State Fair is like your third favorite person in the world.
And I love it, but there are more important things. And it always comes back the next year. So, you know, we've just got a lot of other really important things going on that I just don't know if we'll be able to get away.
Wow. Stu's going tomorrow.
We might still, but not this weekend probably, and that's the kicker. I mean, usually we go in the first weekend. That's when most of the things I want to see is there. Like, some people will say, well, my father's new wife, I'd call her my stepmom, but I don't think they like me to do that.
It does feel like it's been a while, though, to still call her new wife.
That's what it feels like to me, too. Well, anyhow... She plays the piano and the organ and things, and she's got groups that she plays for, and they're going to be at the fair, but it's not going to be until the last Sunday. And so they said, oh, come then. And I have come, like, on the last weekend before, and nothing I want to see is there anymore, as you can imagine, because I like to see the produce, but it doesn't last that long.
Yeah.
And it's all gone. Or I like to see there's, like, competitions for cakes and baked goods and stuff. They're not still there. And there are even some vendors who leave before Sunday. So going on Sunday doesn't work for me. Or the last Sunday.
Yeah.
So that's why I usually go on the first Sunday. And that's just not going to happen this year. So we could go next week in the middle of the week. But there are reasons that might not happen too. So
I just feel like if you don't go, you're going to be insufferable for the next year.
That's not true. I've missed
that
it before.
That being said, you have missed it before.
I missed it before.
And I remember those years very unhappily.
Okay, well,
just
anyway.
Whining.
Hopefully
whining.
I'll get to go, but if I don't, it's fine.
For 11 months.
It's not the end of the world. Azure Talon says...
It'd be funny if the world actually ended this time.
Well, then I wouldn't know the difference, would I?
I'm just saying it'd be funny.
Okay. But nobody would be left to laugh.
Somebody could survive the end of the world.
Well, I hope they laugh.
And spaceships and
I hope
things.
They laugh and
they're
like,
William.
And they're happy.
They're not happy. Their planet just got destroyed.
But they're happy that I
How
didn't get my
rude.
Way or something.
No, they are bitterly amused. Still, it's all they have to hang on to, so we can't deny it to them.
So that's I can give them that.
Yes.
Azure Talon wants to know. He says, dynamic duo. I guess I'm Robin.
Yeah, but I don't want to be back. I don't want to be either one. Like, can we be like Robin and like... Boogie from Nightmare Before Christmas?
I mean, we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
So why not? If two vegetarians have an argument, is it still called a beef?
Only if they're hip-hop artists? I mean, if two meat eaters have an argument, it's not called a beef. You fucking middle-aged white man.
I've never used that expression, actually.
Of course you have not. I'm not sure you're legally allowed to.
I think I've heard it in old movies. People say things like
that.
Oh,
yeah. Got. I like it when it doesn't even have the A. You got beef. You got beef with you. I like that.
But I've never
Speaking
used that
of,
expression.
Though.
Not because I'm a vegetarian, either.
The Impossible Whopper came out.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
By the way, before I get into this, fair warning, if you're like hardcore vegetarian, BK has not said they're vegetarian. The reason is they still cook them in the same method on the same equipment.
That's right.
So if that's a concern, don't eat them.
That's been true of their other vegetarian offers.
Even their veggie burgers like that? That's a shame.
Well, I mean, they let you know ahead of time. And if it doesn't bother you, it doesn't. If it does, you don't eat it. So.
But I had one.
Oh, you did? An Impossible Burger.
Well, because I've been going to Burger King a lot because of those tacos.
Sure.
And so on Tuesday, I was going, and I was under the impression that Wednesday was when it was coming. I had read somewhere August 7th.
Oh.
And this was August 6th. So it didn't even occur to me. But it had been a while since I'd had, like, a Whopper. So I'm like, I think I might just get a Whopper. But I show up, and it says Impossible Whopper. I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to get an Impossible Whopper.
Sure, why not?
And I did, with cheese. And I mean, I've had an Impossible Burger before, so we've talked about this. It tastes like a Whopper. Like, straight up.
Wow.
Like, I think if I was blindfolded in a taste test, I could probably pick which one it was.
Yeah.
But it basically tasted like a Whopper.
Huh. That's good.
And then I hurried to tell all of my non-meat-eating friends about it, and the vast majority were like, oh, yeah. So it tastes like meat, though. And I'm like, yes. Impossible foods as a whole is not a thing for you if you're a vegetarian who doesn't want something that tastes like meat. If you're a vegetarian doesn't want something that tastes like meat, we have a lot of options already.
That's right. That's right.
I've heard, and if you want to get even more recent, I've heard the Beyond Burger, quite good, not really fooling anybody. Mm. But there's lots of Bean Burger, Morningstar has tons of the Garden Burger has some great ones. I like them. I eat the veggie burger at Burger King. It's very good. Doesn't taste like meat. It's very good. So, of course not. But if you like that, then you should get it. And if you're like me, which is I eat meat because I like meat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get me something that I will like as well, that will have less of an environmental impact.
Sure.
Awesome. I am in favor. It's only going to get better from here, too. Because this still isn't perfect. You could be forgiven for thinking it was fairly poor quality meat. Although, the original, similar. But it's really close. They have... I read a review that was like, it doesn't have that same char that you get on a burger. I was like, no, I thought they really nailed that because they did the flame broiling thing on it.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Too. So, yeah, I encourage you to check it out. It was awesome. I will definitely have more of them.
Well, you know that I'm not a big fake meat person. I didn't become a vegetarian.
Also, you guys, you and your wife are fairly opposed to soy, and that's one of the primary things in Impossible is soy and potato-based primarily.
But when, you know, when the occasion arises and my family likes to cook out a lot with, and so it's just easier for me to bring something they can grill or whatever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bother me if it tastes like meat. I'm just not particularly interested in it, but, it's really cool when I can bring something that they're interested to try.
Yeah.
Because, there are health problems in my family history that it might be beneficial not to cut meat out, but to maybe do something else once in a while.
Yep.
So they're always excited if I come with something that they actually like and that they can substitute once in a while just to stay healthy.
I just think I like it for variety as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff. Because like I said, if I can find stuff that tastes like meat and doesn't have the impact, that's great and I will eat that a lot.
Right.
But even if that's not the case, just sometimes.
Just want something different.
It's a nice change.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not opposed to vegetarian things. Honestly, cheese is the big one. I can't give up the cheese. Someday I might become vegetarian.
Well, vegetarians
I'll
eat cheese.
Never become vegan.
Yeah, vegan, yeah.
No, but that's the thing. Like, I still like meat and I eat meat. I could see a day where I decide I'm not going to anymore.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, things are getting closer. There are certain things that I just feel weird about eating at this point. Veal, pretty much. I didn't used to. I used to be fine with veal. Veal is tasty. But I've noticed in recent... It also doesn't come up very often.
Yeah.
But I've noticed in recent years with the opportunity, I'm like, that one just feels weird now. Still eat lamb all day long. Fucking A. Although, some of that's because nobody will provide me with mutton. I want to try mutton. I'll bet you it's almost as good. I love lamb. Mutton's probably pretty good, too.
Oh, yeah, you talked about that.
Yes.
How it's easier to find lamb than adult sheep
meat. You can't find
meat.
We don't eat it. Apparently, I think it has more of that lanolin flavor that a lot of people don't like. But I'm like, no, give it to me.
I thought you loved a mutton lettuce and tomato when the mutton
when is nice and lean. No, but this is funny. If you're in the Iowa City area, here's another thing. But this is just for meat eaters and specifically pork eaters. This month, Jimmy Jack's Rib Shack, their monthly special, they brought back their freaking BLT. One of the greatest sandwiches in the world. Thick Texas toast grilled on there. They smoked bacon, really thick bacon, and lettuce, and best tomatoes I've had this year.
Mm.
And it comes with a basil aioli, which they give you in a little thingy on the side, so you don't have to use it if you don't want. Trish gives me hers. So good. We fell in love with this sandwich like last year.
Mm.
And we've been waiting for it. And I think they waited till the tomatoes were good.
In season.
Yeah. because they're nailing the tomato game. But we had them today. So good. So go and eat that. If you don't like, if you are a veggie head, Jimmy Jack's Rib Shack, also very good. They have a great portobello, grilled portobello sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
That comes highly recommended. Frequently, that's where dinner comes from my gaming group, and one of them is a vegetarian.
Oh, okay.
And she loves it. She just gets the portobello mushroom every time.
Cool.
So, but yeah, if you're a pork eater, go to Jimmy Jack's Rib Shack, get the BLT this month. So good. We went there today. We might go there tomorrow. We'll almost certainly go there Monday. We might go there this weekend. We'll have to see, because it's really tasty. Stu, explain to us puddings. Also, we'll talk. We're not doing it this weekend. It'll either be next weekend or the weekend after. We'll talk about it now that Stu has come out as agreeing to the process. Anyway, if you'd like to know more about dumb shit we talk about, listen next week. Also, if you'd like to tell us what you think about it, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and, you know, tell us stuff. And also, go to YouTube. Full House of Mustaches. It's beautiful. It's just, it's beautiful. Watch it. It's amazing.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.